Z1077 welcomes you to Up Close, a weekly public affairs program presented by Z1077 News. You're invited to call in with your questions and comments. Our call-in number is 366-8471. Now, your host for Up Close, Gary Danielle.
Well, thank you, mystery announcer, wherever you are, and welcome to the Z1077 Up Close Show on this Friday, June 23rd, 2023. I am your host, Gary Danielle. Our producer is Michelle Alley. Our number for you to call and participate is 760-366-8471. The Z1077 Up Close Show is a special presentation of Z1077 News presented in the public interest. Our guest in studio today, the superintendent of Morongo Unified School District, Dr. Patricio Vargas. Dr. Vargas, good morning and welcome to the Up Close Show.
Good morning, Gary. It's really great to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm delighted to have you. Now, when we first met a few months ago when you got started, I said, I'll give you a few months to get your wheels up to speed.
Yes, you did.
And then we'll get you on the radio. So we're assuming you got your wheels up to speed, but there's a lot to learn at the Morongo Unified School District.
The wheels have been spinning.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a lot of work and a lot of great stuff happening. I mean, this has been a great school year.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about you, then we'll talk about what's happening with the schools.
Sure.
Where are you from? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, a little bit about myself. I'm actually originally from Ecuador, South America, and I did come to the States to go to school, came to school here, and ended up loving the system. I mean, the schooling system, ended up graduating from last year at university and decided to continue with my administrative career in education. Once that happened, I mean, I started teaching. I became an administrator, assistant principal, then went to the district office. And with that, I mean, gave me the opportunity to work in different districts. I did work in Corona Norco Unified. I worked in Norwalk La Mirada. And then I transfer now to Morongo Unified School District.
So a lot of it in the California system.
It's been in California pretty much my whole career.
Yes. Yeah, and it looks like you started at the bottom and worked your way up, and that's a good thing.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Well,
yes.
We're delighted to have you here, Dr. Vargas, and we do appreciate it. You were actually the result of an extensive search for a superintendent with Morongo Unified. I think we had interim or temporary superintendents for a couple of years.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, welcome to the neighborhood, as they say.
Thank you. It's been great.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Morongo Unified School District. Part of your getting up to speed, getting your wheels up, is getting to know a little bit about the district. This district is unique because of its geography and its size. How are you adjusting to that?
Highly unique, I will say. And it was interesting because when I was called and I was going to apply to the district, they say it's Morongo Unified. I thought, oh, Morongo is the reservation. And then I came to find out that the actual reservation that belongs to Beaumont is not Morongo.
No.
And so when I came to Morongo, I said, okay, great, I'm going to drive to Morongo. And coming here, I happened to see that I couldn't see homes altogether other than Yucca Valley. And then I thought, where's Morongo? I mean, like, it's extensive. And I kept driving and driving. It was beautiful drive, but it was interesting to find out that everything is so scattered, and yet we have a district that is together. So I love the district. I love the how expanded it is, but the opportunity we have here.
And I don't think people realize what a good district it is. I know, for example, I taught vocational education up here for 27 years. I retired about 5 years ago. People always say, oh, the district's bad, da-da-da. Well, they have a higher graduation rate than the state average, way up. I think the graduation rate for Twin Palms High School is like 93% or something like that. So the kids are getting a good education.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they just came off a huge challenge, which was COVID, which affected everybody very, very negatively. How is it working now that you're done with COVID? Are things getting back to normal? Are kids getting back in the groove? And I know some things, I'm going to give you a two-part question.
Mm-hmm.
Some things are left over from COVID when you were all of a sudden had to rush to do online education out of the blue. Everybody had to invent it in 2 weeks, which I think was a remarkable effort. Although now some of the things you've learned from that, you are still using now that we're getting back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
So how is everybody adjusting to not having those restrictions?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, when we transition into from COVID and from online learning, we learned that students do learn in a different way, and they all learn in different ways. And we have to adjust to the technology that we have available to maximize the outcome on the student learning. So we can't go back to the brick and mortar where we say, okay, pencil and paper, I mean, you have to write these and you have to do that. Now kids have the flexibility to use their devices to maximize their time and to do it whenever they need it, whether it's at home, whether it's in the classroom, whether it's in the bus. They have to have that flexibility to learn at their own pace. Now, one of the things that was interesting is that we brought back the idea of accountability. If you recall, with when COVID happened, the state took away the accountability factors in regards to whether we were pushing. I mean, like testing and test and how we were doing in testing. Now we brought back that idea of, you know what, we can do as well as we did before and even better. So what do we have to bring on the table to have conversations about internal accountability and so that the external accountability, the one from the state, actually works in a good way for us.
So there are some lessons that you took away from the COVID experience and kind of hybridized, and you took the good parts, like mm-hmm. you figured out that kids were learning differently electronically, and then you went back to some of the traditional parts, which is being accountable for what you're learning.
Exactly.
Yeah. I want to ask you, what are the rules with cell phones? Now, I remember when I was teaching in the high school, it was no phones at all. But now the kids are using them to learn. There's a stress there. So what is the official rule about cell phone use in our public schools?
It's pretty flexible. It's pretty open. And it's nothing that we can say yes or no, because we know, I mean, parents want to have access to their student in case of an emergency. So we don't want to ban phones from the hands of students because of that need. However, we do want to put some control and regulation in how they use their phones. I have my own daughter. I mean, she is right now in high school. She's a junior, and she has her phone. But she has classes that she has access to use the phone for any kind of, I mean, research or to question something. But other classes, she has to put it away.
So it's up to the individual teacher in the classroom.
Yeah. Teachers have the option and the flexibility to use the device in a good way when needed.
See, that has changed when I was still active teaching, and again, that was a number of years ago. It was no cell phones at all. We don't want to see them. We'll take them away.
We all started right there. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Back then, it was not at all. But then we have to also think about the age group. If we think about middle schoolers with cell phones, they tend to go in the wrong direction. So that one has to be more restricted. High school, they begin to mature a little more so they can actually have a little more conscious of how to use it. Elementary, that's even more trickier to say whether they can have it in their, I mean, backpack, don't know use at all. So it depends on the age group as well.
The use of cell phones in the junior high school probably primarily for contacting parents, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Is there an age where you suggest that maybe kids don't need cell phones? Is there an age where you think maybe a little bit too young?
I think elementary, they're too young.
Yeah.
Elementary, they're still, I mean, learning. I have a 12-year-old, so I have both the spectrums. And my son, in his phone, he gets distracted. He can do what he has to do, but then he gets into three other pages that is like, no, you're not supposed to.
Yeah, we call that the rabbit hole. go down the rabbit hole. Kids exactly. do it too, just like adults.
Exactly. So elementary students, they're still developing their capacity to understand what's good and how to use their time.
Describe Morongo Unified School District for me. How many schools, how many students, how many communities are you serving? And I don't mean to throw too many statistical questions at
you. No, but it's a good question.
Yeah, but I don't think people realize the scope of the district.
It's a good question because when I first got to the district and I said, I'm really happy because I'm serving the Morongo Valley, Joshua Tree, and 29 Palms, I got people offended because they said, what? Where's the rest of us?
Landers, Wonder Valley, Panorama Heights, Flamingo Heights.
We have all the rest of the communities that we're serving, and I thought I need to drive to those. So I've been driving them into every community to actually being able to see every school. One of the beauties of being an outsider is that I do drive in. And so I happened to get my car at Morongo Valley Elementary, visit the school, and then start driving all my way into every school in the district. So I do frequent visits to the schools that happen that otherwise I wouldn't do it if I'm stuck in 29 Palms. Because it is a long drive if I just have to go to one school one day. So having the flexibility to drive in, I get to visit schools, talk to principals, see classrooms, and actually be able to be with them on a daily basis as much as possible.
When you go visit schools, what are you looking for?
There's a couple things that I always look into. I mean, it's like when I look into going to an office, I do want to see happy people. I do want to see people that are welcoming the customers and the public, the parents, I mean, the community, they are our customers. So I want the offices to be places where we welcome our customers, where we treat them like they are the people we're servicing. So that's the very first thing I see, the office. I mean, and how the school looks from the outside. The appeal that they have, I mean, because if it's trash, if it's anything, then that's on us. We have to clean it. We have to keep it clean. We have to show that we have a great school to present to any parent. And then I do a walkthrough with the principal. I walk through classrooms. I want to see happy kids. I want to see engaged students. I want to see teachers that are excited about what they're doing. I want to see learning taking place. Kids interacting with one another. That's a big one. I know something that we learned, I mean, through COVID and everything, is that the interaction that happens between students and teachers is huge. And that comes in academic achievement, and you can see reflected on that. So I love to see student engagement through those means.
The schools of the Morongo Unified School District, do you actually have a standard? Is there you must meet these standards, or is it common sense? Is it up to the principal? Who sets those for the individual sites? Or all of the above?
I will say so, yeah. No, well, I get to have conversations with each principal, and each principal has their own style. Yeah, with that own style, they have to see what's the big picture for all of us. So if we look for a professional community, if we look for professional schools, if we look for something that we want to portray, we want to become systemic in what we do. And that's a different conversation that we have now at district-wide. It's not anymore Landers does one thing because it's isolated and it's far away, or Yucca Mesa has something else, and Yucca Valley has something else. No, we're all one district, and we all should be systemic in what we do, how we approach things that we do, how we service the parents that we have, and how we create community within our own community.
One of the challenges of the Morongo Unified School District, because of its widespread nature and series of microclimates, is transportation. And that has been a unique challenge for Morongo Unified School District specifically for a long years. Mm-hmm. Give us an overview of the challenge of transportation in a rural school district.
This is something that was completely new to me, and we actually just the problem that we had this year that with the snow coming, I mean, on us. And it was, to me, it was, oh, so here snows frequently? No, it's actually once every 10 years.
Yeah.
You're the one.
Congratulations.
So I got
you
it.
You win the snow lottery.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and to make the decision and to say, we have to close down schools. And we decide to close schools by 6. Let's say it was 6 a.m. because that's when the snow was hitting us. Buses were already en route in order to make it to the school site. So when I think about students being on the bus for an hour, having to get to school and driving all that way, and then getting to school and I'm saying, no, now you have to go back. It becomes really, really problematic, like to make decisions in 1 minute and not being able to foresee what's going to happen. And with the weather changing, I mean, the craziness that we had to deal this year, it was just unexpected. So the size of the district does matter in regards to transportation. Let's say the offerings that we have. If we have in 29 Palms High School, one offering, and Yucca Valley has more offerings due to the size of the school. If we want to provide both at the same time or have flexibility for them to attend those schools, kids wouldn't be able to drive all the way from 29 to Yucca, which now they have trouble with if they want to have any of the CTE courses. So it makes it really complicated, the size of the district and the different transportation issues that we have within that.
Yeah, it'll be raining like heck in North Joshua Tree, sunny in 29, and snow flurries at the top end of Yucca Valley. So
it's
very interesting, and I make a joke about our microclimates, but it's actually very true.
Yes, it is.
So when we do the weather here at the radio station, we have these zones depending on on elevation and all that kind of stuff. So the transportation is managed well. Over the years, I've noticed the school district takes very good care of that, mm-hmm. and that is because for many kids, it's their only chance to get an education is by busing. What percentage of your students are bused to school?
I don't have the exact number, but I know it's a very high percentage.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Because not very many kids live within the community and walk in distance. So there's a lot of kids that are bused.
And while we're talking about the percentage of kids, Moronga Unified has enough percentage of kids who are below the poverty level that they offer free meals. Now, that's a whole other challenge, is giving free meals to, what, close to 10,000 children every day?
Well, when COVID happened, the state decided to allow every student to get a free meal. Regardless of your socioeconomic level impact, it was just free meals for everyone. And that stayed put, I don't know if it's going to last another year or how long. But for now, I mean, every kid gets access to a free meal in the school. And I know they access that.
And that is a result of extra funding based on COVID.
Yes.
So is that funding going to go away? And if it does, that's a big adjustment for you. That's a lot of federal money that was flowing in.
I'm pretty sure, about the state of the of our budget at the state level. And it's not looking very rosy now. It seems like we're foreseeing, somewhat of a slowdown or a cliff that we hope, we can avoid. And it's not as bad as 2008, but it seems to be, that we're seeing some cloudy times in the future.
So is it less funding from the state or the same amount of funding from the state, but now you're going to lose the federal dollars? What is the cliff we're looking at?
So this is what's interesting, what works with the state. Let's say I'm gonna give you an example, just so that we understand kind of like what we're dealing with. If I say, Gary, you're going to get a 10% increase next year. And you say, great. And you say, and the 10% comes, as of January. So you start making plans and you start putting together, things with that 10% that is coming. Then comes January. And then the state says, you know what, we don't have that 10%, but you have to be good on your word because you promised, that you're going to spend it. You already spent it. So, but we owe you. Not only we owe you that, but we owe you the extra money that we're going to give you and the extra money that you had access to. So we're going to be very slim in what we give you. So rather than funding you 100% where you were supposed to be funded, you get funded at 90, 80, 70%. You're like, when are you going to make up, the difference? Eventually. But for the time being, you have to make up with your funds because I know you have, saved some money in your bank, right? And that was the big cliff in 2008. Now we're in a much better shape. At least we have a better source, funding sources to say, let's foresee this happening in the future so that we can weather the storm.
Are you able to project what those funding levels will be and budget accordingly?
We have gone to budget meetings so many these last few months trying to project that. But as you know, I mean, right now the governor is basing his budget on the taxes that are coming in September, as he projected. Like, we're going to wait until that month. What if they don't come? So if they do, then, yeah, we might be okay, and maybe it will be not too bad. But if they don't, people are saying, well, if people didn't pay, will they pay, I mean, later?
In the state of California, is not a certain percentage of the state budget obligated constitutionally to go to education?
Yes, we do have that piece. And yet when the budget is when it becomes lower or the budget gets reduced, then that's the problem. And one of the things that happens is that the governor, I mean, allows us to or projected to have, I mean, these extra monies that he said you can use it for ELOP, Extended Learning Opportunity Program, and you can use it for the arts and music. And they say you have these two grants. It was good chunks of money for the district to plan ahead. And we did. And we planned ahead. And now the state might say, they already did. They said, well, we're going to reduce that funding from what we said. And now we don't know if they're going to come back and say, oh, sorry, we're not going to do it. Yet we already planned and hired and did everything we had to.
So they kind of you kind of have to go on whims sometime.
We do, but we learn our lessons. I wouldn't go blindfolded anymore. I mean, like in 2008, when districts had to cut people and do massive cuts, now we are in a much better shape to say, no, we can actually do it, and we can do it together.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more of the Z1077 Up Close Show. Our guest in studio today is the superintendent of the Morongo Unified School District, Dr. Patricio Vargas. And our phone number is 760-366-8471. We will be right back with more Up Close after these brief messages.
Triple stack at Firehouse Subs. Stacked with honey ham, smoked turkey, and slow-smoked brisket, it's one of their meatiest subs ever. To top it off, a portion of every purchase helps provide life-saving equipment to first responders across the country. So at Firehouse Subs, they don't just make subs, they make subs that are big, bold, and craveable. They make their subs differently because their subs make a difference. Firehouse Subs, enjoy more subs, save more lives. Home Depot Center, Yucca Valley.
Community pharmacies do still exist. The biggest advantage they have is the ability to give you more personal attention. The staff at Star Pharmacy get to know their customers. It's easier to ask questions when you know your pharmacist. Star Pharmacy also carries durable medical equipment, wheelchairs, walkers, and other health aids. A full range of supplements to boost your immune system, even meds for your pet. Visit your local Star Pharmacy across from the post office in Joshua Tree.
Are you a senior or disabled adult in need of a ride? Reach out. Morongo Basin provides no-cost door-to-door transportation to non-emergency medical appointments, grocery stores, and other errands. Serving clients throughout the Morongo Basin, all the way to Wonder Valley and Johnson Valley. They supply transportation to doctor's appointments as far as Palm Springs or Loma Linda. Don't let not driving keep you from getting where you need to go. Call Reach Out Morongo Basin at 760-361-1410 and schedule your ride today.
And we are back with the Z1077 Up Close Show. Our guest in studio today, the superintendent of the Morongo Unified School District, Dr. Patricio Vargas. And again, Dr. Vargas, welcome to the second half of our show, which you will soon discover is the fastest hour in radio.
Boom. Yes, it is.
We always run out of time. Interesting, we just heard from Dr. Otten at Copper Mountain College talking yes. about their availability and congratulating seniors. The Morongo Unified School District has a rather unique relationship with Copper Mountain College, and to give us a little idea of what that relationship is and what the advantages are really for both your school district and the college district.
I was pleasantly surprised to see the dynamics and the relationship we have with Copper Mountain College. meeting with Dr. Otten, meeting with the different, I mean, staff members at the college, I mean, has given us an opportunity to see the different options that we have for our students if we maximize the potential that we have both for the district and for the community college. One of the unique features is that we're isolated. We're not competing with any other institution. We're not competing with any other college or with any other district. So the fact that we're together, we have to rely on the relationship that we have fostered to actually allow our students to take dual enrollment courses, to sign up for different, I mean, opportunities, and make sure they maximize the outcome.
Now, dual enrollment classes, that means a student is taking a class which is giving him credit for both high school and college credit.
A dual enrollment course, actually a class that is in dual enrollment. Dual enrollment, it gives you credit for the college only.
College only, okay.
Yes. Now, if they take, let's say, an AP class, that will give them credit for college and high school.
AP
that
class.
Will be different.
So it's possible that a high school student could get their high school diploma and then already have college credits to go at Copper Mountain College.
It was actually great to hear one of our students in 29 Palms High School, when she received her diploma for high school graduation, she received her diploma for an AA degree with Copper Mountain College. And it was just such an amazing feeling to see someone accomplish that much in the same time that everybody else did.
Well, great. And what a nice big step forward for that student.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
She absolutely.
Walks out of high school with an AA degree.
Yep.
And can then matriculate to a four-year university.
They can easily go into a four-year university, and she actually got into a really great university, Duke University.
Wonderful.
So she's moving there.
Congratulations. I'm gonna loop back a little bit. We were talking about budgeting, and a lot of federal money came in as a result of COVID. That is stopping. Mm-hmm. It may affect. Is that going to affect the feeding program at the school district? Are you planning on continuing that, or just waiting to see what the whims of the state will be?
We will continue with that for now. I mean, yeah, and it's something that we know. I mean, our community benefits from, and we do see the needs within the community, and some of our children rely on that. They rely on breakfast. And breakfast has one of the main, I mean, sources of nutrients that student needs in order to be awake, to be thinking, to actually be alert and ready to learn. So we do want to continue with that, and we do want to continue supporting our community with those with the feeding of our students.
That back to the vagaries of the state and never being quite sure to know exactly what your budget's going to be until usually the last second. What are your priorities when you have to cut a budget? I know that's a tough question, but there's you know, you've got so many things vying for that funding. You've got staffing, you've got maintenance, you've got facilities, you've got on and on and on and on.
And that's a really complicated question, but we are in the business of people, and we have to remember that we servicing the our community, but we relied on our staff members, on our people. So our priority is to save people's jobs. If we save people's jobs, then we can do the job that we have to do. And it's difficult. I mean, and as far as we do have some schools that need a facelift. They need, I mean, like to be remodeled. And we do have work to do, I mean, within our facilities. And we're hoping, I mean, we can work on those, I mean, in the future. But we have to prioritize with people. Is people what matters?
And the amount of money coming into the system is a harsh reality. You have to deal with what you've got or what you're projected to get.
At the end of the day, if you have $100 projected and planned and divided, and then you end up with 60, you don't have where to get it from. So you do have to make some cuts, and you do have to be, I mean, a little slim in what you do.
It's got to be frustrating for someone who obviously loves education, all of a sudden find yourself having to juggle money. I mean, it's a total different set of priorities. It's got to be tough.
It's challenging, and yet it's something that we need to do, and it needs to be part of the whole system. I mean, because we're looking into facilities. I have to understand facilities and know facilities. And it's kind of like, that's not what I signed up for. I did, like you said, instructional leadership, I mean, or education. No, you have to know a little bit of everything, because the job does have comprised a lot more than just education. It's bringing the community together. And that's one of the things that I'm doing or I'm working on this next year, continuing to bring the voices of the community to the table to determine what's best for us, so that we have the right people at the right seat on the bus to move forward.
And how are you determining who you're talking to? Is there a citizens advisory group? Is there a blue ribbon committee? Is there?
We have what I instituted or started this last year is the superintendent advisory councils. And these advisory councils are represented by the community members. We have an advisory council, just community members. We have an advisory council with classified folks. We have an advisory council with teachers. We have an advisory council just with parents. So we have different community members represented and different stakeholders that bring their voices to tell us what's working, what's not, and what can we do better.
I want to talk a little bit about changes in the last few years of directions the school district is getting for discipline. I know there's something called PBIS. Could mm-hmm. you explain what that is and how that works?
So PBIS is a positive behavior intervention and support program. And what it does is it relies on how do we address discipline and how do we work with discipline with our students. We actually had 12 schools receiving a PBIS recognition this year, including 5 platinum, 4 schools received gold, and the rest of the schools silver. And so it was really exciting to see the recognition that these schools are doing. Now, when you see the behaviors that we deal with in the schools, it's sometimes frightening.
Remember, I spent 27 years teaching high school.
So you do know. So it's challenging.
Yeah.
And our teachers are now, I mean, like, exhausted and tired. And they themselves, it's like, I came to this for teaching, and I have to do parenting and discipline. So this is a call to the community. We cannot do this alone. Schools cannot be the only solely institutions to educate the students in regards to discipline and how they behave. We need the parents to come on board, and we need them to be the partners that actually support us in how to ensure that our students are have proper behavior and know how to act in society.
One of the things that the state changed is how you go about suspending students. They have made it practically impossible. What is the process that would have to go before a student is suspended?
Not necessarily practically impossible, but I will say they have made the call so that we take the right steps before the suspension happens. In the past, it would have been this problem takes place, suspended automatically out of the school. Now we say what has been taking place before you make the suspension. So what we're looking into is a more in-depth study of the reasons for suspension, the programs that we have in place to avoid those suspensions, and how that is affecting the school culture within the site. So it takes a much broader approach than just punishment and out of the school.
And I think parents need to understand that that's a state mandate. It's not something that your local school board has any control over.
No, they don't. And this is something, like you said, it's a state mandate that we need to have all these processes in place before a suspension can happen. And once a suspension happens, we have to put either more steps into place when they come back to our campus. Now, do we have problems that we have to deal with and they have to be automatically suspended? Yes, we do. But those are far in between, which tells us about the community we have. We have a great community. And yeah, we do have little problems here and there. But overall, I mean, it's like a great community, and they do want to support the school.
Despite the changes in suspension procedures mandated by the state, have there been any new state mandates for discipline or procedures in the last couple of years that the district and educators have had to adjust to?
I think more than anything is that's the big piece. I mean, in regards to how do we do suspensions and how do we provide the socio-emotional learning students need in order to be okay or good in the classroom. And so it's this ideas that we're changing how do we see discipline and how do we see a student behavior and how do we approach those pieces within the school site.
When I was first starting my classroom teaching, and I taught two periods a day, so it wasn't like I was there all day, but it gives me a good idea of what managing a classroom is. I would go into class one day and get into a little kerfuffle with a student and send him to the office. And the next day I'd come back and there was a student sitting in his chair, rather frustrating. So I went to my principal, Amy Woods, at Corning Palms High School. Yes. She gave me one of the best pieces of advice I've ever had, not just for a classroom teacher, but in life. She said, every day is a new day. What happened yesterday happened yesterday. You had a kerfuffle with a student yesterday. Today is a new day. And I use that, and it was just the best piece of advice I've ever got in education. So.
And I will agree 100% with that, because we do have to think that our kids are developing. They're not adults. They're not responsible for their behavior. We're teaching them how to be responsible. We're teaching them how to take more control over what they do, what they say. But we have to know that between, let's say, 12 and 18, they're going to changes in their bodies, changing and adjusting their personalities and everything, that it's really a difficult time.
And they're always checking their limits.
And social media exploded that, to tenfold.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk about social media, but it's got to
avoid that one.
Yeah, well, it's got to be tough in the schools, because all the kids, whether it's Instagram or Snapchat or whatever the social media of the week is, are on there. Yep. Kids are doing things for just attention rather than something they may actually really believe in. It's just, what kind of reaction can I get? What are people going to say? That's going to be tough. Do you monitor social media, or do you depend on other people to tell you if something's going off track? Or how
we
does
do.
That work?
We do monitor social media, especially, for any posting that will somehow put in danger, the school site or the classroom or another student. So we do monitor that, and we do keep a close eye as much as possible through the means that we have to ensure that actually a safe environment is our sites. But kids are kids, and they come up with things that are sometimes, blows our minds. Like, wow.
We're going to take a quick little break. We're going to be back with the next session of our Up Close Show, our guest studio. And today, Dr. Patricio Vargas, the superintendent of the Morongo Unified School District. Our producer is Michelle Alley. Our number is 760-366-8471. We'll be right back.
Sue's Health Food, committed to your good health.
This is Cody Joseph from The Morning Show with Cody and Jeff. Sue's Health Foods is a regular stop for me. I can get staples there that I can't find at the grocery store. Everything from booch to nooch, as Jeff likes to say. Cashews in bulk, miso paste, local honey, and sweet treats for my kids. They really like the fruit chews from the bulk bins. The bulk bins are probably our favorite part of the store, and the employees are always so friendly and helpful. We couldn't make half the recipes we love without the ingredients we get from Sue's. My family has been shopping there for years, and the quality and care we have gotten has always been top-notch. I love going there, and I love supporting a local business that has given so much to our community for so many years.
Sue's Health Food.
Did you know that your local grocery outlet is independently owned and operated by folks in your community? Unlike traditional grocery stores, this allows us to better serve our customers and the communities in which we operate. We support local schools and charities, like helping fire departments with toy drives. We also donate thousands of items each year to food pantries in your neighborhood. Stop by your local grocery outlet today and see what we've been up to.
Grocery Outlet.
And we are back with the Z1077 Up Close Show. It's 1047. I'm Gary Danielle, and the Z1077 Up Close is a presentation of Z1077 News presented in the public interest. Our producer is Michelle Alley, and our phone number is 760-366-8471. Our guest in the studio today, the superintendent of the Unified School District, Dr. Patricio Vargas. And Dr. Vargas, again, thank you for coming in this morning. I sure do appreciate it.
So thank you, Gary.
For a lot of people, it's the first time they get a chance to meet you on the radio. So that's,
I know.
Yeah. We were talking a little bit about discipline problems and PBS and cell phones and all that. When there is something alarming coming across social media, do you contact law enforcement? What is your procedure if something is alarming?
So we have a protocol in place that actually when anything like that happens, we do inform, the sheriff station. We make the call and call our SROs. So they're present at the school site. And then we proceed, to take the steps.
SRO is a school resource officer.
School resource officers, yes. Yeah. So we inform them. They come to the school site. They support the site. And then the principal or whoever the administrator is at the site proceeds to take action and to jump on it right away. But we do have to, if it's social media, we have to find out, who did it, where did it come from, is it a reliable source, is it truth, is it not truth, what is it, just propaganda, what is it? So we do have to find that out, and we have found, a lot of things that actually are warnings that are really on time before anything happens.
What is your overall relationship with law enforcement?
In working with the sheriff, the Captain Warwick, has been really great this year. And we started his new also to his position, to his role was this last year. And so we both started kind of like new, and we were like, we need to make it work because the schools cannot function without the support of the sheriff's department, the police station. And the sheriff says, our job is to support you and support the sites and support the community. So it has been great so far. And we know they're on a phone call, they're right away, supporting us. And we want to make sure that we keep lines of communication open so that they know what we're doing and we can count on that.
Are there deputies assigned to the high school sites that are actually there at the school during the day?
Yes, we have.
And those are your school resource officers?
One in each school, one in Yucca Valley High School and one in 29 Palms High School. However, those resource officers, they actually patrol the area. So
they're not just on campus all the time.
Yeah. They're on campus most of the time, but they go to other schools and they can actually help out, any other situation.
What is their primary function? Is it to enforce or develop relationships or just be seen as something there to keep the campus safe? What is their priority there?
You describe it all.
Okay.
So all of the above. It's pretty much to develop the relationship and help people understand that they're there to protect us. And they're there to provide a safe environment. So kids have a sense of safety when they see a security officer, a resource officer on campus because they know they're there for them. And they can actually approach and do searches. They can go home. They can go to the home. They can talk to the parents. They can do things that go above and beyond to ensure a safe environment and to support the families.
So by being on campus, they develop a relationship with the students. Mm-hmm. So now the students understand that not all deputies are bad out to get you because they actually have a personal relationship with the deputy. Does that help as far as kids being able to open up to the deputy about problems that they may be having or things that they've seen or things that they know is going on? Is there some of that going on?
We do see, that relationships are developed because the deputies actually begin to know students.
Yeah.
And they can actually say hello, hi, and they develop those connections that takes away the fear and builds the trust. And trust is where we actually can achieve everything if we trust each other. So if the community, the students trust the officer, they can call them. When anything happens or when anything's about to happen, they know who to call. and they know who to contact, and they know they have a person they can trust that they can jump on that.
Now, having a school resource officer, does that come out of your budget or the sheriff's budget or a little bit of both? And how are the municipalities involved?
Right now, it's a support from both.
Okay.
Both ends. So we have to, the city and the school district, I mean, we both pitch in to actually for the resource officer.
I'm going to shift gears on you a little bit. Recently, I think we all, practically every month, there's a new technological advance and a new widget that does that, a new program that does that. We've got AI, all this stuff going on. How do you keep up with that, and how do you plan instruction to allow the students to understand those changes in technology? Are you constantly playing catch up, or are you trying to get ahead of the wave? How does that work in education?
So let me plug that question on AI to see what they say. Naturally, I will get an answer.
Yeah.
We can stop technology from moving forward, but we do need to understand it in order to maximize the potential outcome. So AI is something that's beginning to evolve, and the students are beginning to get hold of that and understand how it works. But if something comes up, I mean, on the side of, yeah, you can create an essay in an AI and just turn it in. Well, there's another program that actually checks those essays and tells you whether they're from AI, and then you get a zero. It's like, what happened? I got an F? I should. Well, do you get it from AI? Yeah. So there's pieces, I mean, that we have to weigh. I mean, what's true, what's not true. And we have to not avoid it, but work with it. So teach our students that AI can be a great tool to get ideas, to understand, to have a mean conceptualization. But you do have to develop your own criteria, your own critical thinking, so that you can put, I mean, together an essay. You can actually defend a thesis. You can have the opportunity to talk, to understand, which is why the primary idea of banking or supporting the academic discourse in the classroom. Now, if we're saying, I mean, we're going to have academic discourse and you're going to have to defend your idea, show me the AI. AI will be on your computer, but you have to talk yourself.
Right.
So that's when you have to expand your own knowledge and your understanding of what you have to say.
We're going to take a final break. We'll be back with the final portion of the Z1077 Up Close Show with our guest, Dr. Patricio Vargas, the superintendent of the Morongo Unified School District. You are listening to the Z1077 Up Close Show.
Interest rates on hard money loans don't fluctuate with the Federal Reserve. This is Patty Brown, aka the Loan Lady or the Queen of Green. Do you need cash for home improvements? Trying to fix up your home to put on the market? We offer great alternatives and flexible lending for home improvement loans and mortgages. Our money to loan comes from local investors looking to invest in people, not credit scores. We've got money for your next project available and fast closing too. Call me today at 365-7003. The Loan Lady. We want to be your real estate lender.
At Morongo Basin Community Health Center, your health is our priority. That's why we have medical specialists, including chiropractic, behavioral health, and now dermatology, available right here in our convenient Yucca Valley and 29 Palms clinics. Make an appointment today. Call 760-365-9305 or log on to our new website, morongobasinhealth.org. Morongo Basin Community Health Center, a program of Morongo Basin Healthcare District.
The high desert attracts incredible talent. Join me, Pat Kearns, every Sunday as Z1077 FM presents the Local Music Showcase, where I curate a custom playlist from up-and-coming local artists like Ingrates. Along with longtime local favorites like Jessica Von Rabbit.
Will you be mine? Will you love me forever? Or just for the weekend? That's fine, whatever. I
and Gabriel Hart.
I'd rather rip my heart right out of my rib cage with my bare hands and then throw it on the floor and stomp on it till I die.
Join me Sundays from 4 to 6 p.m., also available as a podcast, whenever, wherever. Want your music featured? Email pat at z1077fm.com.
And we are back with the final portion of the Z1077 Up Close Show. We're talking about changes and technology and all that. And you mentioned your CTE classes. There are some pretty interesting things going on that I don't think adults realize that they can take these classes. I saw an offering for a class in operating drones. You're offering that at the school district?
So it was interesting when I found out that actually our students can take the class, the CTE class, to operate drones, and they can end up with a certificate that they can go straight to work and make $160,000. Yeah. I was like, what?
Yeah, the real estate industry employs a lot of drone operators. So
that's pretty amazing.
What other classes do you have similar to that, like your ACES Academy?
Well, we have right now a lot of the classes, on the medical industry. I mean, we do have, medical assistant and nurse assistant. I mean, like different things within the medical field that are really positive, for students to get into and have a skill set that is useful as soon as they finish
high school. You can get a job right out of high school with those skills.
They can get a job.
That's wonderful. Dr. Vargas, what can we do, the community do, to support your mission at Morongo Unified School District?
One of the big things is that we say it, at Morongo Unified School District, we say our students, our community, our future. Our community needs to be with us and needs to support the teachers, the principals, and the sites in order to move forward. I know sometimes it's difficult to be there, but they have to be present. Be there when they call a meeting. Be there when they have to be for their student. Check in and check that with every day for their student.
Dr. Vargas, thank you for being our guest. Hope to see you again soon. That's going to do it for the Up Close Show. Join me next week. We've got Cal Fire and San Bernardino County Fire coming in next week. Until then, thanks for listening. Drive carefully and God bless. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Up Close, a weekly talk and interview program presented in the public interest by Z1077 News. Join Gary Denyeau again next Friday at 10 for more Up Close.